Sick? That's sick. My name is Michael Nystrom, and I'm going to talk about tuning images for VDI. We are not going to talk about anything like deployment of VDI, building VDI, VDI infrastructure. We're not going to do performance measurement with really cool tools. We want to talk about how to prepare an image and what should we prepare the image for, what services should be disabled, what configuration should be in there to make that image either perform faster or at least consume less resources. I live in Sweden. I've been doing OS deployment for a long time. I work as a trainer, as a consultant. End of that. If you do have Twitter, and if you do have any questions, and you can't find me, even if I'm here, you can ask questions on that Twitter feed, and I will be happy to reply even after this session is done. So, first of all, we need to figure out why we are trying to optimize an image at all. I go to customers and they go like, we want to do a VDI solution and we want to deploy VDI. Is there anything we need to think about? Yeah, maybe you should think about optimizing your image. Oh, you mean for performance? Well, that's the question. It depends on how you think of this. One of the reasons I do this is to lower the impact on the underlying systems. If I could reduce 50% of all the IOPS that a normal Windows 8 or Windows 7 image consumes, well, then I can have more users on the same hardware, right? So it is performance. But it's not going to be performance for the end user. Windows is still Windows, and it still takes a couple of seconds to log on. Other things you should consider is thin versus thick. I have customers using thin images together with AppV, and they deploy the applications that way. I also have customers with thick images that has all the applications within themselves. It depends. It depends on many things. It depends on if you are doing a pooled versus a personal VDI image. A pooled image has a shorter life cycle. It's only going to live for hours, a couple of hours, and then it's going to be destroyed. In that case, what's the point of having Windows Update running on that machine? It will never update. Should we really have an antivirus application? Since it will be too old anyway, is there any point of having it? Should we deploy application in a pooled machine using regular methods like configuration manager? No, there's no way they're going to be able to use that application before they log off and the machine is destroyed anyhow. A personal image, however, is more close to a standard desktop machine. It lives for a longer period of time, not forever, but it does stay on. We also need to figure out if we're going to do 32 and 64. And this is so funny, because when you meet both technicians and customers, they go like, yeah, it's only 32. That's the only one you should have. Because, and then they have a bunch of reasons. Next week, you meet someone else and say, no, 32 is so wrong. You should only do 64. This is like drinking beer. Everybody has their own flavor and preferred taste. Depends on what the purpose of the image is, of course. If you really need to run 64 because you have a 64-bit application, then it's fine. Maybe that pooled machine is only used for browsing the internet. In that case, a 32-bit image will be perfectly fine. How do we do with applications? Maybe AppV is the good thing. In that case, the AppV client needs to go into the image. UAV is going to be better
than my document, sorry, than roaming profiles. Maybe we don't use roaming profiles. Maybe we build everything on server 2012 or R2 and use the VHDX or VHD file and store the information on that drive instead. Depends. It does matter what version you have, though. If you do have the professional version, it works. You just need to buy another extra license. I'm not a licensing expert, but I guess the pricing for that license is more expensive than buying a software assurance license. So it doesn't really make any sense. Therefore, the enterprise is going to be the version you have. And as you can see, the Windows 8 Enterprise and Windows 7 Enterprise have basically the same features and functions except for remote FX multitouch. You do need RDP 8.0 in Windows 7 to make that work. If Microsoft is going to have a more regular update of everything they have, the more important it becomes to use standard-based solutions. Less tweaking, less manual work, because we will not have the time to rebuild our homebrewed script every time. If you do use pooled VDI machines, then maybe you need to recreate your reference image a bit more often than usually. Maybe every day, maybe every week. And doing it manually doesn't work. So we need to have something that can build those reference images fully automated. It needs to be easy enough to learn. And the solution we have is called Microsoft Deployment Toolkit. I'm going to look at that in a couple of seconds. You need to think about disk size and partitions. How large should they be? Now, when it comes to pooled, it's pretty easy. When it comes to personal, I've seen all kinds of sizes. It depends on where you store the data. I do have customers saying, we would like to store the data on the VDI machine itself. It is a bad idea. But working as a consultant means that you listen to the customer, you try to convince him once, twice, and then I stop. Then I just go for, okay, your money, your company, your decision. So I tried to keep them smaller, but in some cases, it actually ends up in hundreds of gigabytes. When we deploy them, they are small, but then after a while, they actually get bigger and bigger. You need to think of what are you supposed to have on them. For pooled machines, we don't need to patch them, so we don't need room for that, so we can have them pretty small. So let's flip over to demos. So here's my machine. In this case, I use machines that is based on a 40 gig drive, and when they are deployed using differentiating disks, they extend to 1.4. If I take the other machine and check that machine, it's based on the same drive, but it's only extended to 1.18. The first one is non-optimized, and the other one is, because we don't have that much stuff in that image. We have removed a lot of components. Now, in Windows 8.1, this will even be better. One of the problems we have right now is that if you do uninstall components, the image will be smaller until the first time you run any kind of Windows update. Because when the update process starts, it's going to update all the removed components. That has been fixed in 8.1, so it doesn't do that. So for a pooled machine, that is fine because it's never going to be updated. But for a personal machine, removing the application using DSM command line doesn't really make the same sense. Question over there, sir. So the question is, if I use DSM to inject the drivers, inject the updates, will that have any difference between running Windows Update? And the answer is no. It's just when you kick in the component-based setup engine that problem occurs. I don't think anybody thought of that, but that's the fact. A 64-bit image is a slightly bigger image than a 32-bit, so for condensing space and only having a pooled machine that is supposed to be a web browser, well, a 32-bit image will consume less space. Now, that is important when you don't have data deduplication. If you do have data deduplication in like R2, then it doesn't really matter that much because it's going to be duplicated anyhow and remove the duplication, so it will be rather small anyhow. So what about antivirus and anti-malware? Well, Windows 8 contains antivirus and anti-malware. So should we add any of those? Well, that depends. In pooled machines, it's very common to remove them. So in the demos I have, we're actually going to remove the antivirus and anti-malware. If it's a pooled machine, it's going to survive for an hour. What's the point? Well, it still needs to be protected, right? So how can you protect the machine? Well, you can put it behind another network and hope that the network will cover that protection for a certain amount of time. Make sure that the user is not a local admin. He's running as a user in that machine. And if he's a user, it's really hard to install any kind of malware, since that is what they actually need to be able to install. Bad thing is that if you put a malware in the app store, then they can install it. Hopefully that is controlled by someone like Microsoft, so you don't have malwares in the app store. Some customers do pre-scan. So before we fire up the machine, we scan the drive to verify that we have no fishy things in that. App Locker is a good thing to do. I do have customers running Windows 7 today, and I don't have any antivirus on their laptops or their desktops. They use App Locker instead. Everybody is a user. They use App Locker. The chance of getting a virus or a malware in those machines are very small. App Locker will protect pretty good. You need to clean up the image. This is not that important when you have a thin image, but if you do have a thick image, you need to clean it up. There's an application from SUSE Internals called AutoRuns, which will give you a list of all the things that happens in the background. Every application you install have that. Anybody installed Acrobat Reader? Do you know how many times per hour it checks for an update? Every 8 minutes. Just to verify this, it could be a new version, right? Which is likely, since it's Acrobat Reader, it could be a new version every 8 minutes. It's frequently updated, as they say. Yeah, Java is the same. There is also tools from the ADK kit, which you can use to see why does that machine take a long time to boot? Why does the logon process take a long time to boot? So you can use those tools to figure that out. But let's flip over to AutoRuns. So this is my server. This is my personal demo server. It has all kinds of applications installed in it. Some that are really good, and some that shouldn't be installed on a server. So let's do that. Tools, AutoRuns. Now, this is what happens in my machine when I log on. You can see that I have cleared a bunch of checkboxes. They were not cleared by default. They were filled in by default. And you can see some of these, which is kind of funny. Here's one, right? It says Adobe ARM. And here's another one, Adobe ARM. Why do I have two of them? Well, I had one, and then there was an update for Adobe. And of course, that update adds its own registry value again and again and again. So for every install I do, it's going to add itself to the logon process. That means that you, of course, need to remove it for every version you update. That you can do in different ways. Group policy is one, script is another one. We also have, I'm going to disable that. I don't think I need it. QuickTime. Something else. Here's a nice one. Windows Mail. I have a server 2012. It's running server mail. Well, it's not really Windows Mail. It's actually the, what do you call it? The consumer setup of LiveWriter and all that stuff. Automatically installs that. You can see SkyDrive. You can see other things. And you can even see things that doesn't exist anymore. So every time I try to log on, it actually tried to run this. Shouldn't do that, so I can remove that. This is Explorer. This is what's in Internet Explorer. Scheduled tasks, services, all this consumes time when you boot up a machine. So you need to figure out how to remove them. One of the best ways I know is when I do install an application and that application also adds those register values, I put a wrapper around the installer, like a VB script or a PowerShell script that directly after the application has been installed, remove the components that is not supposed to be run. Sometimes you can modify the installer itself by some kind of utility from the vendor, but that doesn't happen that often. If you do Windows 7, this is one of the settings in the unattended XML file that you should consider. It's called Do Not Clean Up Non-Persistent Devices. That means keep the drivers you have. Now, do I really need to have any driver when I'm running a virtual machine? Yes, I still need to have drivers. Since it's a virtual machine, it needs virtual drivers. They are already installed. So then you sysprep the machine and you reboot the machine and it's going to do a plug and play discover. So it's going to spend a couple of seconds, like 15 or 20, to figure out that I'm running the same hardware. So it's going to throw out the drivers and put them back again. Same drivers. What's the point? You do that together with persist all device installs, which means don't throw them out and keep them. You need to have them both to make it work. The only issue we have with this is that you need to have the same virtualization platform. You can't change, since plug and play is more or less not disabled, but it's going to keep the drivers. Another thing that you might want to consider is the copy profile. Let's assume that a new user logs on to your VDI environment and he needs to have some basic settings that should be applied to him as a user. When you create the reference image and you install applications, and then you can configure that image. If you do that, all the settings will be applied to the local administrator. When you then deploy that machine and you use copy profile, those settings that the administrator had will be transferred as default settings for new users. Therefore, they're going to inherit that. That is a setting you use in unattended XML file when you deploy the machine, not when you create the machine. But for Windows 8, there's a new setting. So this is just a standard, extremely boring Windows 8 machine, nothing fancy at all. Change the resolution so you can see better. When I run sysprep like that, it gives me the same command lines that has been around forever, except for one. Mode. In Windows 8, mode is a new feature. And it has one option. It says :VM. That's good. I guess it has something to do with virtual machines. If you run the command line or the application interactively, you cannot check that box. So it's only available when you do sysprep using a command line. Okay. So let's see if we can find any information about that. Absolutely. No sysprep. Let's do Windows 8. And suddenly, there's not that many results at all. Luckily, that is explained, of course, on TechNet. First of all, that command doesn't support the capability of adding an unattended XML file when you sysprep the image, but it supports the following command at least. However, it doesn't explain what it does. So I've been trying to hunt down someone at Microsoft that can give me an answer. What does VM do? You don't need to know that. Thank you. Perfect. It's on TechNet. Great. So I asked them, is it pretty much like, you know, persistent device and all that stuff that we can do in unattended XML file for Windows 7? Close to. That is the only answer I have. I have been playing with it, and sometimes it works, and sometimes that machine never boots up. Until they give me an honest answer of what actually is being done, or I need to debug it myself, I'm not going to use it because I don't know what's going on behind that scene. But it's a good thing that they finally start doing things like that. So if we go into our deployment server, which I happen to have here, and we open up that task sequence, go to OS info, and then we can edit our unattended XML file, hopefully. The easiest way to find things is to use find. Persist. There you go. If we start reading about this, it says the same thing that I had on the PowerPoint slide. So the only thing we need to do is to add that, which I had here. It's highlighted in blue. There you go. So you flip them to true. When you deploy this image, you also add a copy profile. It's going to be in here, and there you can see copy profile. And the highlighting they have here is not that easy to find, but here it is. And that goes into specialize. And then you see copy profile, yes. This is my unattended XML file for creating the image, and therefore it's not in here. It's going to be in another unattended XML file, which is applied when we actually deploy this machine. And that is the way to copy the settings. That was the sysprep thing, excuse me, that I told you about. I already did that demo. There's a bunch of services that you can turn off. What you need to know is that, I mean, if you buy Windows 8 as a consumer device, do you think that has other settings than the enterprise version of Windows 8? No. Everything that Microsoft ships is configured as a consumer device, even if you have the enterprise version. When we come into a VDI scenario, are we really going to use Home Group? Do we really need to have the plug-and-play detection engine running? Do we really need to enable the internet connection sharing? They are all components that's running in the operating system. And you can, of course, turn them off. I'm not going to go through this list in detail, but basically everything that is overwritten by a line, you can turn it off. Background intelligent transfer bits, most likely that can be turned off. BitLocker, I'm pretty sure we don't need BitLocker in the VDI scenario. Backup, we don't need. Bluetooth doesn't work. Device setup. I also turn off the diagnostic policy servers. That is the, if you try to browse the internet and it doesn't work, it shows you, would you like me to fix the problem? And then it starts the diagnostic engine that shoots up the XML file and gives the information to the user so they can troubleshoot internet connectivity. If they don't have connection to the internet, most likely they don't have a connection to the VDI solution either. If they have a printing problem and the recommendation is to unplug the cable, that's going to be hard too. Most of that information doesn't apply to a virtual machine anyhow, so that's why we turn it off. Fax, family safety, function discovery resource publication, home group, internet connection sharing, iSCSI. Some of these are manual, but I disable them for one purpose only. There might be a user that has the capability of enabling it. And I don't really want this end user to say, oh, I can do iSCSI. No. Please don't do iSCSI in your virtual environment. Shadow copy, we don't need that. Offline files, optimized drives, goes away. So as you see, there's a lot of things you can turn off. I'm going to show you a script that runs this and fix that, but let's just go through this first. Other things you might need to do or should do is increase disk I/O timeout. This is especially important for Windows Vista and for Windows 7. They have a very low value on disk timeout. Now, it depends on how you run this, but the worst case I've seen so far is a customer calling me in pure panic. Time is 3 a.m. in the morning. 1,000 machine just decided to defrag at the same time. They could use the illumination from the SAN switches as illumination in the hallway because everything was shining up and going haywire. So we increased disk I/O timeouts. We disabled hard disk timeouts. We configure the event log, of course. We disable NTFS last access timestamp. That is disabled in Windows 8, but in Windows 7 is still there. Hibernation system restore. There's no point of having system restore, right? But if you don't turn it off, it's going to generate it. on a periodical basis. What you also need to do is perform a disc cleanup. Why do we need to do that? You're creating a reference image. You're downloading all the patches. Now it's patched. Now the image is slightly bigger. A lot of these patches will be superseded by other patches. What happens with the old ones? Still in the image, still consume space, so we remove them too. Quiet boot, UAC secure desktop prompt. I usually turn it off. It's easier for help desk personnel to access the machine. You can set visuals to a minimum. All the drag and drop with boxes and circles and that stuff, nobody really cares about it. They're running a VDI machine. They just want to be able to perform whatever is supposed to perform as fast as possible. You need to de-optimize Internet Explorer. IE has a really cool feature, which is offloading. It can offload any kind of graphic work to the CPU, or the GPU, I would say. Now, offloading to the GPU is nice when you have one. If you don't have one, which you don't have in a virtual environment, there's no point of offloading. It will be an overload instead. So we disable that. So let's see how this works. So let's start with the how do you build all this stuff? Well, this is not going to be a training in MDT. Question over there, sir. It's not UAC that I turn off. It's the black or secure screen in UAC. So it doesn't show up the... I mean, instead of being prompted for the admin credentials, it just gets an access denied. And if you really need to elevate yourself, you need to right-click and elevate you as the administrator. But it doesn't give you the secure desktop anymore. So I don't disable UAC. Thank you for pointing that out. So what I do is that I install Microsoft Deployment Toolkit on a machine. I create a deployment share, which is kind of easy, by specifying a share. Then I import my operating system, in this case, Windows 8 Enterprise X64 RTM, by right-clicking and pointing to the ISO or DVD. Don't need any drivers. Might need packages. Packages are language packs. And they are also patches that you can inject, as you mentioned before, using DISM. And then I create a task sequence. And a basic task sequence looks like this. It's straight up, nothing fancy at all. It has sections. It's going to do an initialization. It's going to validate. It's going to do a pre-install. Inject no drivers whatsoever. Then it's done. I'm going to run the installation for background info because that's the only application we have in this solution. And if I do have other applications, they will install. Windows Update is not enabled, but if I want to do that, I just unselect disable. So this is a standard, almost standard. I do one thing. That's the wrong button. This sequence is a standard sequence except for one thing. In Microsoft Deployment Toolkit, when you use Light Touch, when the operating system is installed and you select to do a sysprep and shut down, it's going to keep the unattended XML file in a folder called Panther. Now, that is not any kind of danger. The problem is that your VDI solution might have another unattended XML file, and they might put it in another location. Now, it's going to depend on where do they put it, because all the different locations has dependencies. And the worst part of this is that everything that goes into the Panther folder wins. That means that in many cases they go like, oh, we couldn't do the reference image in MDT. Why? No, because, you know, the machine wasn't named correctly, it didn't join the domain, and it gave you a stupid error message about something called light touch. Yeah, you didn't remove the unattended XML file. No, we never removed it before. Why do I need to remove it this time? When you capture using ImageX, they don't capture the Panther folder, because that folder is an ignore list. But when you sysprep and shut it down, it's still going to be there. So I created an application that actually removes that file. That application is not that hard to create. It's a VB script. And there goes. That looks like this. That's the file. The only thing you need to do is remove it before you sysprep the machine. You can also remove the entire Panther folder. Question over there, sir. Exactly. So the remark is that if you do the reference image in Configuration Manager, you also need to remove all the setup engines. Otherwise, it's going to try to install the agent. That is correct. That is one of the reasons I don't do it in Configuration Manager, just because it's easier to do it in Light Touch. But if you do, you need to remove all its components too. That is correct. So, what have we done with this one? Well, there's two ways of doing this. You can either break down all the things you want to enable and disable as blocks in the task sequence. That way, you can add, remove, enable, disable without interfering with previous added command lines. If you create a VB script or a PowerShell script and you modify a VB script or a PowerShell script, there is a small chance that you forget something, like a comma or a colon or a parenthesis or something, which means that the entire script breaks and now you need to troubleshoot the entire script instead. So I prefer to break it down, but it's going to be the same net result. If you do it by breaking it down, it's going to look pretty much like this. People ask me, why do I do run a PowerShell command at the beginning? The only reason I run this, which means PowerShell XE command set execution policy bypass, more or less it means turn off any kind of security. Well, it's a controlled environment, so it doesn't matter. I do this because then I can do things like this. Then I can just run, I can't click. I can just run commands, I can run files without having anything to bother about. When I run all the commands, I set back PowerShell to default settings. This is instead of running everything as a PowerShell script. Microsoft Deployment Toolkit has the opportunity to run PowerShell script, but I would just like to run the commands on a single line. There's no point of creating a script for that. In this case, you can see I'm disabling things. We also modify a registry. We disable features, a bunch of scheduled tasks. And then we have something called boot training. This is one of the insane things. But Windows tries to improve over time. So after 6 reboots, when the operating system has been running for at least 120 seconds, it's going to optimize boot order and start order. Therefore, we, very simple, do this. Not that advanced. I'm going to pick it up so you can see it again. It's just very boring to watch. And just to be safe, I do it for 121 seconds. You never know. And then I restart and continue and over again. So that's 6 reboots. That takes 2 minutes. That means approximately 12 minutes of rebooting, doing nothing. Rebooting, doing nothing. It's like watching Ice Road Truckers or something like that. And then we return it back. So that's one option. The other option is, of course, to run everything as a script. Another thing I do is I remove things. I remove things that is not going to be needed. In this case, I actually uninstall IE10. This is a customer that said, we're not going to do IE from the VDI solution. It's going to be a pooled machine. It's going to have one application. Well, the easiest way to remove it is to remove it. And you can do that. So you can remove every component if you want to. The image will be, as I said before, smaller, but it will then expand to full size when you do any kind of patching to it. I also have another problem. In Windows 8, we have a really nice start screen, right? We can do music, can do Bing, maps, all that stuff. In a pooled environment, do we really need all those applications? We might, but most likely not. So maybe we should remove them. Now, when you remove applications, it's not that hard, actually. It's pretty easy. I'm just going to do a snapshot before I do that. Yeah, I'm a chicken. Sorry. Let's fire up an elevated PowerShell command prompt. PowerShell, I need it to be elevated. So, that's all my application, GetAppX package. And they're easy to delete. Remove app X package. There you go. Oh, a couple of red ones. Yeah, there are some applications you can't remove. Anyone who want to take an educated guess which one you cannot remove? Store. Yeah. You can't remove IE10, but you can remove IE10 by using the dism command or PowerShell. That's why we have the uninstall feature. So now all the applications are gone. Kind of. But they are not gone. They are still in as provisioned packages. So the next user that logs on will have all the applications anyhow. So you also need to remove the application that is staged. And that command is provisioned. Get appx provisioned package. And that one requires online. So now I can see all the provision package, and then I, of course, can remove them. So now we don't have any applications at all. This takes a couple of seconds to actually remove them. So what if a user really needs those? Is it possible if store is enabled, can they reinstall the application? Yes, they can. So it could be a smart thing to say, I'm going to remove all the pre-provisioned applications, and if the user really needs them, they can go to the store and add them. That's not going to be a scenario in pooled, but it's going to be a scenario for personal machines. Pretty much like a terminal server because it's set up the same way. So now we don't really have any applications left. That script does exactly that. And of course, I added the error action, silent continue. The only reason I do that is that if I do that, MDT doesn't bother me by putting up red ones and saying, oh, something was wrong. Question?
Yes, what does the online switch do?
So the question is, what does the online switch do? Online means online to the running operating system. Otherwise, it assumes it's a VHD or a mounted VHDX file or a WIM file, right? So online means running operating system in this case and nothing else. So it's not online, because that's something that in some scenarios online means online, but in this case it's just that it's a running operating system. Then we have the same boot training, and then I have a VDI script. So let's check that script and see what it actually contains. Scripts, let's find VDI fix 3. This one is built from the beginning with something called the VDI optimizer. It's a guy called Jonathan Bennett that wrote this. He at that time worked for Microsoft Consulting Services. This script is now updated by Jeff Stokes. It's available for download. I'm going to show you where it is. And it has some things. For example, use auto runs. Yep, done that. Run the disk cleanup tool. Okay. Can be automated. Thank you so much. Disk defrag and consolidate free disk space. You don't need to do that on Windows 7. You don't need to do that on Windows 8. Oh, sorry, you need to do that both. It's the other one you don't. You need to run that on Windows 7 and 8. You need to reboot the machine. That's fixed. And you don't need to run the defrag and optimize boot files. But for Windows 7, you need to do that. And it gives you a bunch of cautions. It's going to enable RDP. Shouldn't you do that using group policy? Well, that depends, right? If the machine is a member of a domain, all that stuff, well, then you could do this using group policy. Or should you do it in the image? It's going to be faster to boot the machine if you do it in the image. So for everything that you can do in the image, do it in the image, because it will have a faster boot time and less impact on the network. Group policy is really nice to configure certain things, and some needs to be therein, but in this case we can do everything in here. Then we start turning off services, adaptive, application layer, we turn off bits. Some of these are just registry values. In this case, it's an H key local machine. Okay? There are other settings. They are not H key local machine. They are current user. you disable it for a current user, use copy profile that then applies. Now, that is a problem if you do use roaming profiles and you have the same roaming profiles for every user. Now, they will not have these fabulous settings for increased performance. Instead, they will have their regular setting for the regular machine. In that case, you should consider to do something called loopback using group policy, which means apply to the machine and all the settings in there for the user on that machine. Then we turn off basically everything. The disk, the fragment service goes away. Link tracking, home group, super fetch. It's a lot of things that goes away. Here's Defender. Well, Defender is nowadays the antivirus in Windows 8, but it was used to call Defender for that. Then we start doing other things. Themes, desktop Windows Manager, the hard disk timeout, offloading of IP, disable system restore, NTFS. In some cases, it's smart to disable the machine password change. Depends on how the VDI solution looks like, but in this case, the machine will never try to change its password. Memory dumps, screensaver. This one is good. If any one of you are doing Windows servers virtualized, that is another good parameter to set on servers too. Especially when you have patch Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever you have, and you reboot a massive amount of servers at the same time. Not all services will be started. I have so many customers with this issue. They ask me, sometimes that service never starts, but I can't see any errors. There's nothing in the event log. It just never started. What's the problem? It took too many seconds to fire up the service, so Windows just quit trying. Can you fix that with automatic restart of the service? No, since it was never started, there's no restart. So do that for servers too. As you see, there's a bunch of scheduled tasks you can turn off. Event logs. Gadgets, first run for IE. And then we have something really funny. Let's flip back to a Windows 8 machine. Disk Cleanup Manager is a command line utility or a UI, and I guess most of you have been running this from time to time. It has a couple of default values set. You can see that download program files is checked by default, but for instance, setup log files is not. Recycle bin is not checked by default. I can go to the system version instead. And that's going to do, give me a more thorough list of more things you can turn off. And if you go into this list, you have system queued, Windows Defender. And if you have installed any kind of patches, I haven't done it on this machine, it's also a checkbox for previous superseded patches. So how do I run this utility with all these checkboxes pre-configured? Well, that's the trick. You can't. So what you do is this. You create a set, because that's exactly what you do when you check all these boxes. You want to create a set. That set has a random number. In this case, we specified a number and say 100. Therefore, we can go into the registry and add the number 100. And this list is actually what we check. So if you manually do it and go into the registry, you will see that all these check boxes are turning into registry values. So we pre-populate the registry with all that information, and then we run it. And that will clean up the drive, remove all the gold patches, temporary files, and just throws everything away. So now the image is a bit smaller. Modifying menu show delay. Here's the off screen. Please take a note that these settings are per user. So that means copy profile needs to be in place for this to work, or you need to use group policy with the loopback processing turned on for this to work. Otherwise, it's not going to work. Don't show Windows contents when dragging, things like that. Turn off other visual effects. And down here, we have only functions. Now, this file, this small application, is something that Microsoft internally uses. And I'm going to extract that folder. And if you open up the README file and you change the font size so you can read it, it's on TechNet, Jeff Stokes. Search for it and you will find this file. The idea of this file is to run it interactively. You have created your VDI image. You're about to sysprep it. You have rebooted it 6 times. It's good to go. Question over there. If I can put the link up again, I can absolutely put the link up again. And then you run the HDA application. And now I can check whatever I want to disable. And when I do execute, it's going to modify my machine. And I think the note here is stating the most important thing. If you break it, you get to keep the pieces. Don't do this on your host. Don't do this on your workstation. Do this in your virtual machine. And do a snapshot before you actually do that, so you can see the net result of running this. What I did is that I took that script and I turned it into a script without the HDA. So it's a native VB script, and that was the script I showed you just a couple of minutes ago. So when you do all this stuff, how good does it get? Well, we can see that by checking out this. So I have a bunch of PowerShell script that creates machines, and yes, they are going to be available for download at deploymentbunny.com later tonight after country drinks, hopefully. Depends on who's paying for the drinks. I have scripts for creating basically everything. So let's do the reference image. In this case, I set a static fixed MAC address that has a correspondence to the rule files we have in LightTouch. So here I have a setting that says, if that happens to be your MAC address, this is the image you're supposed to install. That way, I have a completely automated and silent way of installing my reference images. I just fire up a PowerShell script. I wait for approximately 35 minutes to 45 minutes, and then I have a new VHDX file. I copy that file up to my whatever VDI solution I have, and it's done. So I can actually generate my reference images every day. I don't do that. I do it once a week. I think that's good enough. So that's why I created with a fixed or a static MAC address. Then I want to try this. Question over there. So the question is, what's dev mode? Dev mode is a parameter I use for troubleshooting. So when I do dev mode yes, it's going to fire up a couple of pauses in the task sequence so I can verify the step. Instead of flipping them on and off, I just have a master switch that turns it on and off. If we check the other script, because I really need to verify that everything works. So deploying them into production is not really an option for me at this moment. So I have a PowerShell script that creates the machine. Basically the same thing. It's just that I create a differential disk based on that machine. I define memory. I mount the image. And then I copy in my own unattended XML file, which contains the copy profile. So this is a simulation of the process that a VDI solution will actually do without having the VDI solution on-prem. So it gives it a name, do things like that. So let's run it. I'm going to create two of these. One machine is going to be native, and the other one is going to be an optimized machine. So that was the standard machine, and this is the optimized machine. So let's fire them up. I can't fire them up exactly at the same time, but at least I'm trying as good as I can. So on the right side, you can see a standard machine. On the left side, you can see the optimized machine. And even if I started the standard machine before I started the optimized machine is faster. It's way ahead of the other machine. Now, if you have one machine, does this really matter? No. If you have 1,000 machines, does it really matter? Yes. Then it's money. It's so easy. It's also annoyed users or unannoyed users. I prefer the unannoyed ones. This is just boot. Has nothing to do with performance, actually. It's just that we eliminated everything that is unnecessary to have the boot. We could actually do some more. You saw that I had a disabled boot UI. The boot UI that I disabled was Windows 7. There's another command for Windows 8 that disables this stuff that is really important to see when you can't see it. It's just in a virtual environment. And that machine is now ready to log on. And the other one is soon ready to log on. Now, if these machines are running, that is an unoptimized machine. And that is an optimized machine. So what is the difference between these machines? Unoptimized. It actually consumes more CPU. It spikes from time to time. But the worst thing is that the disk spikes pretty frequent. Now, these machines have been running for 2 hours and 53 minutes, so now they are pretty calm. But the first 15 to 20 minutes, it's indexing the entire hard drive since search is running. I disabled search, especially in pooled machines. There's no point of having them there. The other machine, which is optimized, you can actually see it's consuming less memory. But the best thing here is when you go in and see the disk performance, it doesn't consume any IOPS at all. It's just loaded in memory. If you compare the number of processes and handles, you can see this machine is running more threads, more handles, and more processes than this machine is running. To be honest, Windows 8 is really good. The optimization you can do only applies when you actually build a VDI environment. If you're running 10 virtual machines, I wouldn't bother. I wouldn't spend a second. But if I'm running thousands or 10,000s of them, I would bother, because then it makes sense. Windows 7 has a larger difference. And if you go further down the operating system, the bigger the differences are. I haven't done Windows 8.1 yet for reasons that you most likely do understand. I just got the bits a couple of months ago. Sorry. So I haven't played with it enough to see what the differences are. With that said, I'll read it. There's, of course, resources around Channel 9. I think most of the stuff we do here is recorded. TechNet, I would recommend Springboard if you haven't been on Springboard. I need you to evaluate the session. There's two reasons. One is that I need some kind of score to be able to come back. Otherwise, I can't do that. And, of course, I want to know if this was a good session or not. So please, be honest, be gentle, but fill out the evaluation form. I think you can win something, right? It doesn't say. What do you win this year? An elephant? I would like to win that. Thank you so much for stopping by. If you do have any questions, I'm going to be over there in just a couple of minutes. Thank you for stopping by.